It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here as we talk about co-ops. A co-op, in essence, is a business organized, owned, and controlled by the people who use its services. We explore what cooperatives are advocating for in legislation and in policy initiatives. Join in with your questions and comments about this business model. The number to call in, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Daniel Smith is president and CEO of Cooperative Network. The organization advocates for co-ops in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Dan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with your top legislative priorities this year to improve the economic positions of co-ops in Wisconsin. What would you say?
Well, I think it's the same as it has been for the last couple of years, as we really advocate for the expansion, continued expansion of broadband throughout the state. And the reason that I say that, Kate, is because we know how important broadband is into linking communities together, to linking our population together, and to linking various businesses. So really, we really see that the core is the expansion of broadband that brings communities together, because that's one of the fundamental principles of cooperatives, are bringing communities together.
Yeah, go a little bit further there. With co-ops, how is broadband essential?
Well, our cooperative base in Wisconsin and Minnesota, it stretches border to border. And cooperatives have a long history and heritage of supporting communities through every type of need that the community might have. And when you look at our cooperative membership base, Kate, it's everything from agriculture to energy to healthcare to housing to credit unions, really touches every part of the rural population in both states, as well as parts of the urban population as well. And I think having broadband in effect to help those businesses grow, to provide the goods and services that our rural population and our more remote communities need to prosper and to redevelop after really decades of losing population and losing businesses in those areas. And that's why we always kind of start with that communication tool, that business tool that broadband provides, that can really help these, the revitalization of rural Wisconsin, I think really starts right there. Now, it actually extends beyond that, because obviously we know that broadband isn't the fix for everything. But if we have that in place, then we can move on to all of our other priorities, Kate, such as rebuilding the infrastructure, workforce development. It's really hard to do a workforce development program if you don't have broadband and remote work capability or be able to link businesses together.
It's a building block. Yeah.
Right.
When you represent co-ops in Wisconsin and our neighbor Minnesota, what about the regulatory climate to operating cooperatives? Are there contrasts that you see between Minnesota and Wisconsin?
There are different policies in place and different bills, but actually, it's more similar than you would think, Kate. You know, and I get that question a lot, because Cooperative Network is so diverse. We have, you know, we represent cooperatives from a dozen business sectors in two states. But when we sit down and look at our priorities and the policies in both states, especially in, under the current system, Kate, the current administrations, I should say, in both states. And we have a government affairs director in Minnesota and a government affairs director here in Wisconsin. And we sit down and have those conversations with our team. We're working on very similar platforms. So I think it's more similar than you would anticipate it to be.
We're talking about priorities of the Cooperative Network. Its president and CEO is Dan Smith. You can join in with your questions about co-ops in the different sectors. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. One sector you're very much involved in, one of the largest sectors of you work with, is agriculture. And one concern you say for agriculture co-ops is consolidation in the packing industry. Why is consolidation a concern?
Well, I think we learned some lessons when COVID hit, that consolidation of agricultural production into fewer and fewer hands in the processing industry is a very risky endeavor. What we like to see is diversity in business and population across the rural landscape. And when farmers have to wait a year, sometimes more than that, to get their animals into a processing facility to have that that animal processed, or dairy processing has become more and more consolidated, as has our vegetable processing. Anytime that we see that type of consolidation and specialization in an industry, the risk goes up. So we're very, very pleased that Governor Evers has really invested in his budget the funds needed to really diversify the processing, to add workforce development into those areas, an additional $300,000 per year for grants to the dairy processing. And then, of course, the what you started off with was the meat processing. And we are support the request for an additional $800,000 per year in meat processing grants. That's not only addressing a need from the agricultural side, it's workforce development, it's starting new businesses in rural areas, it's adding to the tax base, and it's responding to an emerging need. And cooperatives have always had a successful record of responding to emerging needs.
Are farmer co-op members more, do they face lower risks? Are they more economically protected in this business model?
I wouldn't say that they're more protected. I think what we're trying to do is to reestablish a diverse system in the processing and agricultural issue network across the state. Risk is inherent in any type of business, whether it's a co-op or a private sector business. There's no magic bullet here. But I do think having the principles of cooperatives guiding a business where the members of the co-op make the decisions, where they elect a board of directors to conduct their business, and the risk and the reward goes back to the members. So obviously, since I said that, there is both risk and reward in starting any type of business like this. So it's a different structure. I think it's one that's been proven to be very valuable over time. Co-ops have such a rich history and heritage in the upper Midwest, everything from agriculture to our energy and on and on. So I think that this is a responding to an emerging need that we really saw during the last couple of years, Kate.
Let's look at credit unions for a moment here. Credit unions being in Wisconsin exempt from state and federal income tax, banks and bank associations are opposing the status. Why do you support credit unions remaining tax exempt?
That issue has come up several times over the last few years and maybe even before that, because cooperatives do not pay cooperative income taxes. But there is a long history behind the cooperative tax status, and it primarily relates to the fact that cooperatives are nonprofit, member-owned, democratically run organizations. That means every member gets a vote. And as I just said a minute ago, every member participates in the risk and the reward of that cooperative. To tax a cooperative would mean double taxation on the members. And that's why we support the credit union status as well as all of the other cooperatives as a nonprofit entity. Cooperative Network is actually structured as a nonprofit cooperative trade association. We are structured exactly as our cooperative members are. And our cooperative members actually provide the resolutions, provide our game plan for what we are going to support and what we are going to oppose. Our members direct our activities. And I believe that's the same for all cooperatives, and that cooperative tax status needs to be protected. And we're engaged in conversations at the Capitol on a regular basis in both states to do so.
Cooperative Network CEO Dan Smith, an organization that is lobbying, working on behalf of co-ops in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Be part of this conversation with a question. You can share your thoughts on the role of cooperatives here in Wisconsin. Call in at 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Worker-owned cooperatives, they allow people who work at a business to have the majority say in how the company is run and to directly benefit from its success. We explore what cooperatives across Wisconsin are advocating for in state government. Call in with your questions and comments along the way, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. The organization Cooperative Network advocates for co-ops in Wisconsin and Minnesota, and Dan Smith is here, its CEO. Let's bring in Lisa now in Madison. Lisa, hi. What would you like to share?
So, hi, I live in a housing cooperative, and the issue that we have going forward is people that want to buy into the cooperative obtaining mortgages. The bank we were working with was bought out by a bigger bank, and they are no longer accepting our model because when you buy into a cooperative, you're not buying real estate, you're buying shares. And so the suspicion is that AI, since it's taking over so many industries, is not recognizing the cooperative as a viable mortgage or a realistic mortgage. And so we have found a smaller local bank, but, you know, the worry is going forward, we need more options. We need more than one bank where buyers could obtain a mortgage. So hoping that something can be done to help our situation out.
Lisa, thank you. Dan, go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Lisa. The cooperative housing system has evolved over the years, and the challenge that you bring up, Lisa, we have seen that in the past as well in several different areas. The Minnesota housing cooperative housing system is pretty well advanced, and it's a real good model to watch there. We work very closely with the housing cooperative housing in the Twin Cities, and that issue of protecting your equity in a cooperative housing model continues to come up. We also have worked on other housing models in the past, especially in manufactured housing, which is another evolving need, such as the one that you bring up, Lisa, as how do you protect your investment in a manufactured housing facility if that facility decides to close down. And we've worked on bonding issues for those things. So I think continuing to look at the funding into the cooperative model where equity is not easily defined is a continuing challenge. But I thank you for bringing that up.
Is there an evolution in AI going on here? Is that part of the disruptor?
It could be. And I think we're all learning that almost on a day-to-day basis now, the wide-ranging impact on that. But that is that, and especially along with the consolidation in the finance industry, which Lisa pointed out, of larger and larger banks and the distance growing between the credit institution and the consumer continuing to expand. So keeping that communication open, making sure everyone understands the needs on both sides of that will be very important as we kind of move through this new area.
We continue to hear about that lack of workforce housing, and you see housing co-ops as a way to ease the housing shortage in Wisconsin. Can you explain the connection there? How so?
So cooperatives have this history of responding to emerging needs. So I guess I'd like to expand your question a little bit, Kate, beyond just the housing.
Sure.
So when we look at revitalizing communities, rural or urban, there is no quick fix. But I think because of the cooperative model being involved in so many different sectors, so Lisa brought up the credit part of that, how you get financing and how you protect your equity. So we're working with the cooperative models on the credit end of it. But when we look at a community, it isn't as simple to address like workforce shortages simply by bringing a new employer in. We prefer a more holistic approach, where to revitalize the community, yes, you do need jobs, but you also need housing and cooperative housing units, cooperative manufactured housing units can play a role in that. Cooperative facilities to provide housing for low income families. And then if you have the credit unions addressed, cooperative healthcare. One of the things that I'm really excited about for the cooperative model in the future is, can that cooperative model serve for childcare and elder care, transportation, worker co-ops that were a group of workers who would, you know, rough housing and put in landscaping and those types of things. So very holistic approach all under the cooperative model that can really revitalize communities and provide answers to those emerging needs in that area. Housing is one of them, but healthcare, transportation, credit, energy, all of those things are all part of it.
You have mentioned mobile home parks or manufactured home parks and establishing housing co-ops. What are the barriers there to create co-ops in these places?
Well, we have a great model in Minnesota that we worked very heavily to establish over the last 5 years to a decade. And providing a cooperative development support system to provide affordable housing co-ops. Minnesota just funded a $65 million grant program to preserve and increase manufactured home access. And we're really excited to see how this helps Minnesota rural workers. And we'd like to see something similar in Wisconsin. One of the real benefits of being a two-state organization, Kate, is you can see what works in one state and what doesn't, and then you can adjust. And that's a two-way street. Minnesota's watching Wisconsin, Wisconsin's watching Minnesota. When a mobile home facility closes down, and many of them are because they were built, you know, a half century ago, and some of the infrastructure is really deteriorating. A lot of them are privately owned. It's a tremendous burden on the people who live in that facility, who very often don't have the financial resources to move their home to a new facility, even if they can find one. So we're looking at ways could the residents of a community have the first right to form a cooperative, to take ownership of where they live and stay in that place, to continue to work where they live and have their families with them. I think it's an exciting opportunity, and it has a great deal of, you know, humanity involved in it. Let's help people.
We have Cooperative Network President and CEO Dan Smith with us. You can join in 800-642-1234. Mike now in Wauwatosa. Mike, hi, what's on your mind?
Hey, good morning. And this might be an ignorance on my part of what the cooperative really is versus another business, but where is the line drawn between business and cooperative? Because when you start talking about shared resources of housing, transportation, healthcare, that sounds to me like company town back from the 1800s and 1900s, where we were having this one overarching entity. How beholden are people within the cooperative to the cooperative, I guess? Where do people have their line drawn there?
Mike, appreciate that question. Dan?
Sure. Mike, I think the difference where you said where the line is drawn is who owned the company town. I think the company town owned by a private individual or a private entity versus the cooperative model. And the cooperative model is, governed by seven principles. And those principles are really the opposite of what we saw in the former company towns, you know, voluntary and open membership, democratic control, members economically participate in it, independence, providing education and training to the next generation, cooperation amongst cooperatives, and then concern for community. And one of the major roles at Cooperative Network is that we never forget the seven cooperative principles. That's our game plan. And I think when those are respected and in place, the risk and reward, especially the rewards of economic and social and cultural change in the community is shared by all the cooperative members.
Dan, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Dan Smith is president and CEO of Cooperative Network. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.